I'd like to welcome all of my listeners to Prime Time Entrepreneur. We're meeting today with one of the leading African-American entrepreneurs with a wealth of knowledge as she leads the charge for and restoration for the legendary Newark Symphony Hall, which we'll get into today. We'll get into a lot of questions about that today, but I want to welcome the extraordinary talent and the most talented person that I could think of in New Jersey, Ms. Tanisha Nash Laird. How are you doing today?
Jamil, oh my goodness. Thank you for having me. That's quite an introduction I got to live up to.
No problem. I wanted to kind of dive into your background a little bit. And when you go online and you Google your name, everything comes up for Newark Symphony Hall because you're doing tremendous, tremendous work there. And it's a legendary institution. And I can't really even tell you how admired I am about all the work that you're doing there. But I don't think that people realize the history, your history. Like, you have TED Talks, you have so many different interviews that that are separate from Newark Symphony Hall. And I think it goes back to about 4 or 5 years ago when I'm starting to see these interviews and starting to see all this advice that you have for women business and Black-owned businesses. And I kind of want to get an idea of like the evolution of your process over the last like 4 or 5 years. Like, when you started thinking about this on a grand scheme of things, I want to start about 5 years ago. And what was the direction, your goals up until this point?
Wow. Okay. So listen, I have to figure out where was I 5 years ago. So 5 years ago, that would have been 2016. I was working as a consultant. I have a consultancy called Legacy Business Advisors, and it was specifically set up initially for one client. A lot of people know this. And that client in 2011 was now, unfortunately, my late husband, but my husband at the time. He was co-founding a pretty big venue in New York City, which is called Mist Harlem. Some people may have heard of it. And I set up this entity just to be a consultant to them. One of the things that they were doing at that time was raising money for Mist. And originally their strategy around raising money was just going to high net worth individuals for venture capital. And we had some relationships. You know, my husband and I have no, he grew up in Hollis, Queens. So you guys might know some of the famous people that have grown up in Hollis. And I had worked with athletes and entertainers, mostly in PR. But then when they showed me the business plan and said that that business was going to create 80 new jobs in Harlem. And I knew that Upper Manhattan had doubled the unemployment as the rest of New York City. I said, you guys are looking at this all wrong. We should be looking at this as an economic development project. And so subsequently, moving forward to 5 years ago, that was really what I was digging into, leveraging my knowledge as an economic development expert, having been a municipal and state official for economic development, to assist visionary leaders, primarily entrepreneurs of color, on how they can get their big ventures done.
But, you know, that's a process, and it's all a part of like networking and being able to bring in new people. And it's a very, very long process. And I'm assuming because of that, you know, you acquired a wealth of knowledge about Black-owned businesses and women business. And I was just doing some data research, and it's like, you know, 40% of US businesses are women-owned businesses, right? Mm-hmm. And then like there's 12.3, and I didn't even know this before, you know, doing the research, right? There's 12.3 million women businesses in the country, and they usually outperform men businesses, right? So like,
Yeah. And Black women are the women who are starting businesses at a more rapid pace. But absolutely, if you saw my TED Talk, you will see that I quoted one of, and I want to point out, by the way, again, not a lot of people know this. So I had a different talk prepared. And because I'm crazy, that morning, I totally changed what I was going to say. So most of what I said during that TED Talk was just kind of a talk about the things that I knew. And had known is that one of the Shark Tank investors had realized that when he was looking at his portfolio, that all of the women ones outperformed. And data now on that goes just beyond those anecdotes. But yes, women are outperform, and yet women like minorities, people of color, still have the most difficult time accessing capital for their business.
And that is one of the biggest questions I've had, and that's going to come next. But the question I have about the women-owned and Black-owned businesses is the actual concept about expansion, right? So, like, what do you think that these businesses need to be able to expand from startup to mid-level to, you know, major conglomerate? Like, what is missing? Because a lot of times, like, I think that these businesses get stuck in a rut and they can't really move past where they are and they can't really provide more jobs and create more revenue. And I want to know from your perspective, what do you think is needed?
So you're talking about scaling, and I definitely think that typically the scaling, to be honest with you, is access to capital and other resources, whether it is, you know, the supply chain, if they are manufacturing, you know, a lot of those things happen in these sort of closed loop, what used to be called, I don't hear the phrase good old boy network anymore, is the way I was. On the other side of 50. But when I was younger, I would hear that a lot, you know, the good old boy network. And, you know, we oftentimes are just not in that network. And so what's amazing about this time period is that we're creating our own networks. And I mean, both women and people of color and Black people in specific are creating their own networks. One of my mentees, I'm her mentor, yet she was part of raising $50 million to invest in other businesses, Black-owned businesses. And so I think, you know, especially during this time period where there's sort of a racial, I will call reckoning about the inequities and access, but I'm still experiencing that to this day as a nonprofit leader fundraising and seeking to raise $50 million just for the renovation, which we'll talk about later. I still see it, even though I'm in those same rooms, you know? And so what I often have to do is prove that I know what I know just for them to even respect, even though I'm still in those rooms, right? So one of the things that I really think is that we need to get more people into those rooms.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. So that's a really big statement. So do you think that it's a waste of energy to be able to connect with what you like to call the good old boy network, or rather than try to raise capital within your own neighborhood, within your own community?
So I'm going to give you an anecdote of someone that I know and respect. He's an older white man. He's in finance. I didn't know him very well. My late husband knew him because my husband went to an Ivy League school, and one of his Ivy League classmates, who then went on to an Ivy League B school as well, is the managing director of this older gentleman's firm. And so he liked my husband. And after my husband died, although he just knew him socially, he and I met and we talked about doing business together. I introduced this older white man in finance to a celebrity I know, a legendary athlete who I have been business partners with. And this white man said to me, you know, you're only the second Black woman that I've known professionally.
Wow.
Second, right? I could never say that I've only known two white people professionally. And so I say that to answer your question. I think it is possible for us to build our own networks and necessary for us to build our own networks, but I think it's important from my perspective to still connect with the wider society, mostly because I think we're owed it, right? You know, I think this country was built literally on Black labor. The wealth in this country was built on Black labor. So we're owed it, right? In that sense. And so I think that is really why, you know, I can continue to seek to access the resources, because otherwise why should I remove myself from an opportunity? Just because from a you know, idealistic standpoint, oh, we're just gonna do it. Well, we can't, because very few of us have been able to accumulate the amount of wealth. You can pretty much tie, there's a through line in most of the wealth here in the United States, and it's to the slave trade. Right. So, you know, it's impossible for us to, I probably know a few of them, most of them that I've known are in finance or in tech that have accumulated some wealth. But at the end of the day, they're still benefiting from people whose wealth accumulation ultimately came from the slave trade. So, yeah.
That's insane.
Like, it is what it is, right? It is what it is. So I should not remove myself because of some high ideal, I don't think. I think it's were owed it. But you know, that I want to just point out is consistent with how I view things and my personal philosophy, right? I think everybody, whether you realize it or not, have your own sort of mission and values. Recently, very recently, as in this week, I found out an organization that views themselves as a competitor to us, I don't necessarily view them as competitor, tried to take a project that we were working on. And the people who are involved in the project are Black people. And they came to me and told me about this. And you know what I said? I said, if they can offer you more money, take their money. I was like, I'm doing this to create opportunities. So to me, that's a compliment that they're coming after you because they know that you guys are working with me. That's right. The whole reason that I'm doing this. Absolutely. Ultimately, they said, no, we want to stay with you. And I was like, oh, that's good too, because I don't have the kind of money. But that's why I think we're going to win, right? I think if you have this this abundance mentality instead of a scarcity mentality and that it's pie and it's crabs in a barrel, I think that's really where that you, before you even realize it, you've lost because you're going with that mentality. But yeah, shoot. And this is, I'm going to tell you, this is probably the second or third time that this has happened, right? So I think it's fine. But you had other questions. I know I'm taking you like
no, I keep it going. I love it.
Okay.
I mean, and just to kind of talk about the scarcity versus abundance mentality, that's a huge deal. Like the 10 extra goals, which you are obviously 10 extra your goals for the renovation project that you have there. Yeah. And to be able to understand there is trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars to be able to have access to. You just have to have the knowledge to be able to have access to it. And I find a lot of times, like, and this is one last question about raising capital, but I find a lot of times, like, there's some things because of who we are, we have to be able to exceed the, you know, the personality and exceed the abilities of a lot of people that we're trying to race against. And unfortunately, when we're, you know, just based on nepotism, based on a lot of different things, we have, our stuff has to be extremely well done and extremely, you know, showing an upside for investors to be able to invest. And I just was wondering, from a preliminary standpoint, do you think that being able to prepare for an investment, because to me, I think that you can raise money anywhere. There's trillions and trillions of dollars right out there. You can always access the capital. But do you think it starts with the performance of the business plan? Do you think it starts with, like, being able to get out there and network? Do you think it's, like, where do you think the problem is, the secret sauce that people just don't have to be able to raise capital?
Oh, the secret sauce. You must have also seen a quote I put, or maybe you didn't, on
I've been watching
Instagram. You follow my Instagram too?
Yes.
Because that's the only place I put that thing. Listen, you just have to be sure what you're offering, right? So be sure of what you're offering and how you differentiate. I think that is one thing that a lot of people ignore. But listen, I've seen mediocre things get funded. You know, it's, you know, you just go for it. You know, I think it's all about persistence, right? And, you know, just having this go for it mentality. I do have some concerns about that amongst people of color, though, because I'm also concerned about our wellness. And I think oftentimes a lot of that, whether you realize it or not, you know, when you're experiencing this trauma of rejection and people telling you you're less than, that ultimately wears on you. And there are unfortunately some cases now, some people might say that there might have been some mental illness issues to begin with, because I don't know, but unfortunately I can tell you there are several Black entrepreneurs in particular that from the outside we thought were being very successful, but just the toll that process of fundraising and keeping their businesses afloat in the face of inequity and discrimination is something real. So where I do think we need each other is that, right? I think, and that is where we really need to kind of lock arms and say, listen, I'm not gonna let you fall. You're not gonna let me fall. We're gonna take our mental health and our well-being is paramount here. That's really what I think you need to dig in into your community, because I definitely think, and now, of course, if you know some rich Black people that want to give you money, you take their money too. Take all the money,
I gotta think
all the money. Listen, I have friends who really had this philosophy that they did not want to take money from other people. And I said, that's fine. Whatever your personal philosophy is, it's fine. I know what mine is. Mine is I've advised people, just take the money. You know, I mean, you're going to be in business together. That gentleman that I mentioned, that I'm only the second Black person, he's a Republican. Not only is he a Republican, he's a conservative Republican. And we were talking about doing this business deal with a historically Black business, two historically Black businesses. And what is that? I'm just going to quiz you. What do you think are the businesses that Black people have been in the longest and that perhaps endure to this day?
Oh, God. Great question. I can't even.
I'm going to tell you. Funeral homes and life insurance. That remember, once upon a time, we could not even get insurance from white-owned insurers, right? So we had to build our own insurance companies. And then we also had to have our own funeral homes. And so we were looking at doing a deal, believe it or not, within that space, because many of those insurance companies now also have asset management companies, and they're looking at, you know, doing financial management and transactions. And so he and I were talking about in that space. And he said, listen, you could take all your money and do whatever you want, invest in Black businesses. But he's like, I'm going to take my money and do what I want. I said, that's fine. But, you know, but some people, even that might be an issue for them. Some Black friends, I would never do that, something they said with a conservative Republican, you know, and so, but I said, money is money. Now, if he's someone who I believe, and I don't believe, is actively engaged in supporting my oppression, I think he is indirectly, to be honest with you, just because of the things that he espouses and his philosophies and the people that he supports. I do think those people are support, you know, Trump, you know, those sort of folks. I hate to go political. I'm sure that's okay on your podcast. Okay. You know, but I don't think he's actively, I mean, he's engaged in it. And so I was okay. Ultimately, the project didn't happen. So, you know, it was a moot point. But by the way, he did introduce me to that other Black woman that he knew, and she's more his contemporary. You know, she's pushing 70 as well. She is high powered, and I consider her one of my mentors right now. She is absolutely one of the leading people in her space in the country. Wow. And so, yeah, but it just shows you the level that you have to be at to even interact and engage and meet someone like him. But I'm gonna give you just one final answer. I know this is like, again, going
on. No, this is great information. Thank you.
I don't get to talk about this kind of stuff a lot. So I mentioned earlier that I was in a business partnership with an NBA legend. He's in the Basketball Hall of Fame. And the arena in which he played, which is the Staples Center, the other team, not his team, the other team that plays there, which is the Clippers, they had an issue. You know, they had a Black Lives Matter moment before it was Black Lives Matter. I don't know if you remember that.
Sterling.
So the acting person that came in, oh my gosh, Dick Parsons. Dick Parsons, right? I said, oh, well, do you know Dick Parsons? Because, you know, he's like the acting president of the team now. He's like, no, I don't know him. I couldn't believe that he didn't know. So I got to introduce Dick Parsons in this legend, and I don't want to put the legend on blast. I love him, but I mean, it's irrelevant. It's the point is what he said to me, and he said, Tanisha, do you know we don't get to meet a lot of Black people like him, it makes their network is small. Think about you're in South Jersey. You said think about Meek Mill, right? Look at who came to his rescue. The white
Sixers,
white guys. I could have probably helped him in some way and had some friends who could help him, but we just don't have access. There's no mechanism, no vehicle to introduce high powered Black people with athletes and entertainers. In fact, the young lady that I mentioned who considers me a mentor, how we met is her brother, who was played for Harvard in the football, but did not go to the NFL, but he played football for Harvard. And then he went, of course, to Wall Street. And then of course to Wall Street. And then he became an agent, sports agent. He and I were on a panel together, And that panel was specifically how to connect Black and Latinx professionals to Black and Latinx and ex professional athletes, and how can we bridge that so that we can work together. That's but again, cool. The fact that these titans of what they do, their worlds just never intersected, was really fascinating to me.
There's a book, it's called The Tipping Point, and it kind of by Malcolm Gladwell, and it starts to talk about like mavens and connectors and stuff like that. And I really do think just the way that you're talking, like you're definitely a connector of that kind of
thing. Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
And that's exactly what, I mean, those, you thrive really well in that space. And it's so interesting about the stories that you're telling me and the things that you've done in the past, because that's exactly what you do. It's such an amazing talent to have that most people just don't have. They can't really see the peripherals on why these two things are going to be, you know, make tremendous success.